holding up so far? Great. You're looking great. Welcome back to the final presentation of the X Conference 2009. I do hope your weekend has been entertaining and inspiring and stimulating, and that you aren't as tired as I am right now. How are you doing? Pretty good. Great. We've brought together this hour many of the leading activists pursuing a political resolution to the UFO ET issue. They represent six countries on the stage and are part of a growing international disclosure movement. Also included in our panel are two military witnesses to events past. This is appropriate. Those witnesses who come forward and speak out about their experience are indeed committing activism, and whether or not they advocate a particular explanation for those events, that doesn't matter. And their numbers continue to grow with each passing year. Now, there's a microphone, or will be a microphone, set up here in the center for questions that we will be taking on camera for our panelists. Those not so inclined can also write your questions on a 3x5 index card that you should... Okay, skip that. I guess those aren't available. So forget that. That was, you know, it was just a joke. So let's begin by introducing our panel. Each will speak briefly, introduce themselves about their work, and then we'll move to questions from the audience from the podium, unless Steve will be changing that too.
No. Thank you, dear. Thank you. And hasn't Shara once again been a wonderful host for this conference? Right? All right. If CNN hadn't gotten screwed up about 20-some years ago, she'd still be anchoring some news on that on CNN. Well, oh, no, that wasn't that long, but whatever. All right, look, folks, there's 13 people here. I think you can do the math, right? So what I need you to do is, in as few words as possible, give me the essence of the work that you're doing that is activist in nature, that's going to move the issue forward, right? And we get through everybody, and then we'll get into a little dialogue and some questions, all right? And if that mic is live, what we'll just do is just keep passing that mic on down because it's wireless. And I'm going to control the mics a little bit so we don't get the feedback. I'll put this here, right? And in terms of questions, when they come up, I'll come over and give the mic to the questioners. Some of them are shy, so we'll put this back here a little bit. I want to get people. Okay?
Hi, I'm Joe Montaldo. I'm owner of the Paranormal Radio Network. And since we're going to be talking about activist stuff, what we do is my radio network was designed so that we could get information out to the general public. There's not much in the way of mainstream media doing this these days, so the network was designed to help people like Stephen Bessette and quite a few others that are working in the field to give them a venue that they could actually express what they believe, what they think we need to be, and what direction we need to be moving in, how we can force disclosure from our government.
My name is Jeff Peckman, and I'm the chief proponent of the ballot initiative in Denver to create an extraterrestrial affairs commission, and that is a way to engage the voters directly in disclosure without relying on elected representatives.
I'm Terry Mansfield. I'm the co-founder of the Arizona Department of Peace campaign, which is a grassroots, inclusive, transpartisan movement to create a cabinet-level Department of Peace that will focus on ways to de-escalate violence in our communities. It will also create a four-year National Peace Academy, which will focus on teaching conflict resolution mediation. Could it be that the Department of Peace movement that's been going on for the past 6 years, there's a bill in Congress right now to create this Department of Peace, H.R. 808, introduced by Congressman Dennis Kucinich 8 years ago. Could it be that this grassroots movement to create the Department of Peace on Earth is propelling us forward to create peace in space? And that's where my focus is now. Thank you.
I'm Bill Kirkland, and I live in Kansas. My wife's name is Dot, and she lives in Oz, you know. So I'm working as much as I can trying to get this information forward. But remember, at Holloman, I didn't see anything. If I had, I would have taken a note not to reveal this. Okay? And I know that you people have done a remarkable job on doing this stuff. I am being interviewed. I have probably 3 to 4 hours of interviews that have taken place here locally. Some of them are overseas, some of them are locally. And Steve has said, if you get an opportunity to take an interview, please take it. And that's what I'm doing.
Speaking to the end of the mic, please.
Okay, on the end of the mic. All right. I'm Milton Torres. I unfortunately had the scramble on a UFO to shoot him down. And since then, I was plagued with this. I had it kept quiet for over 50 years until the MOD just released the information and the phones just kept ringing off the hook. And I answer to anyone now that they've released it, I tell everybody all about it. And these people don't believe. Once they see one, they'll believe it. Believe me. And my wife was Dorothy. She couldn't come here. Her sister passed away. She had to go to the funeral. And so she's home. Plus, she's in her own world. She had all the soap operas, all of the home shopping network, all those things she watches. I only stay on either the Turner Movie Classics or the History Channel. History Channel is my learning channel. Everything I used to know that I have forgotten, I relearn. Their universe is incredible. They come out with information. You know, it's just unbelievable how information keeps developing from all the wonderful things like the Hubble and what have you. And basically, I'm a proponent of letting us know what the hell is going on so that we can make our own minds.
That's activism, my friend. By the way, Milt, keep watching the History Channel because I got a feeling you're going to be on it pretty soon.
Let's hope so.
Next.
I'm Rebecca Hardcastle, and I'm the creator of Exo Consciousness, which talks about the extraterrestrial origins, dimensions, and abilities of human consciousness. It's interesting today when Edgar Mitchell was talking about the end of the, or the demise of the Big Bang Theory, because one of the things that I'm working on is rooted in John Mack's work, where he talked about fencing the fear and the trauma of contact and experience and abduction also. And what we're able to do in the 21st century now is actually rewire those networks and not have to fence the trauma, but actually dissolve trauma. And that's one of the main things that I'm working on. In Phoenix, we're working on a UFO curriculum. I taught extraterrestrial reality at Scottsdale Community College, and we continue to work on what the post-disclosure world will look like, and it will look like extraterrestrial reality core-type courses and ufology-type courses in community colleges, high schools and middle schools, even down into elementary schools. I also work with the PhoenixLights.net group. One of the exciting things that that group is doing is we're taking, with Dr. Lynn Kitai and Larry Lowe, we're developing a Google Earth platform and then using software to build 3D images of what the night of the Phoenix Lights looked like. And we're finding that it was actually not one craft, but an entire parade of crafts that flew over Phoenix. Where someday in the post-disclosure world, we're going to take Google Earth-type software and say, what happened emotionally in Phoenix, Arizona? What happened to the consciousness of the citizens in Phoenix, Arizona, and what does that look like as that map of consciousness changes? So there's lots happening in Phoenix. I hope you all come visit.
I'm Joe Bookman. I ran for Congress. Steve tells me I'm the third candidate for federal office to openly call for disclosure during my campaign. I ran as a libertarian, as I said here last year in this moment, about a year ago right now. I believe the universe is teeming with libertarians. I don't believe there are any Republicans or Democrats out there because libertarian political philosophy is grounded in the peaceful principle that no being has the right to initiate force or violence against another. I also have a grassroots exopolitical website, thepeopleofearthapologize.com, because I believe we have a few things to apologize for in order for any peaceful, wise being to feel safe about dropping by and having a good time. I'm also part of a revolution in education. I just joined Western Governors University a couple of months ago, as a department head where we do self-paced, competency-based online education. And so I'm kind of at that intersection between the realms of politics and education that Steve was talking about at the banquet last night. And finally, since I only have a minute here, I brought an hour-long interview I did on an internet radio show a year ago, and I'll be happy to give those away to anybody who'd like to ask me for a CD, and you can hear all about it there. And it's a pleasure to be sitting next to you, sir.
Oh.
It's an absolute delight. Thank you for the work you do.
Thank you very much. Aren't you wearing an ex-conference t-shirt like Joe? I don't understand.
Wait. I think this is how I got double the amount of time to talk. Be sure to attend the 2015 post-disclosure ex-conference that will be right here.
And there are quite a few, there are a lot of t-shirts out there, folks. They'd love to sell you some. It helps to spread the word, so I'd appreciate it if you'd pick up some t-shirts. At least, if you don't like t-shirts, give them to a friend or something, and they'll wear them, and people will want to know, what's that shirt mean, right?
Especially
please.
Ed Mitchell flying on the next shuttle.
Yeah, and then we have the campaign to get Ed to wear that shirt, which I'm sure. First, let's get him on the shuttle, and then we'll do the shirt campaign. Alfred.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm Alfred Weber, and of the Institute for Cooperation in Space. And I'm working on three main areas. One is to help educate people about the challenges and the transformational avenues opening up now in Solar Cycle 24, which goes from 2009 to 2020 with the solar maximum coming up in 2012 to 2014. And the challenges are both in terms of our infrastructure and an upgrade in our genetic and our consciousness makeup. And what may lie at the other end of it is a veritable golden age. The other two focuses we'll be announcing tomorrow at the National Press Club press conference in a joint effort that we have with Dr. Michael Sala of the Exopolitics Institute, Victor Vigiani of Exopolitics Toronto, Ambassador John McDonald of the Institute for Multi-Track Diplomacy. We now have spoken to senior officials in both the Office of the President of the UN General Assembly and the Secretariat, and both have indicated that they are prepared to shepherd through a resolution in the General Assembly implementing UN Decision 33426 of 1978, where UFO contactee Prime Minister Eric Gehry of Grenada obtained passage of a decision, a UN General Assembly decision, which in effect authorizes setting up a UN agency of extraterrestrial affairs. So the one ingredient that is missing is the mouse that roared, and that is one nation out of the 192 UN member nations to introduce that resolution. And with all of the countries like Peru, Brazil, Mexico, Denmark, France, and the UK, we have a head start. So we're going to be issuing a call for member nations to come forward and for us, the citizens, to approach their and other member nations. And the final area that I'm focusing on is reuniting with our genetic cousins, an intelligent civilization that apparently lives under the surface and on the surface of Mars, that now, through a series of photographs, including NASA photograph PIA 10214, that we can most plausibly explain as a deliberate leak by NASA to the civilian population by posting on its website a composite photograph taken at ground level by NASA rover Spirit in November 2007 and put on the internet in January of 2008 of a photograph teeming with Martian life, including Martian humans. Those are our three priorities. Thank you.
It's a full plate. Victor?
Thank you. Victor Vigiani, Director of Media Relations for Exopolitics Toronto. Myself and our director, Michael J. Bird, we represent Exopolitics in Canada, and our efforts to widen the circle of awareness of the extraterrestrial issue, both in government, in academia, and in the media in Canada. And our main focus is with the media, and we work very hard with all the agents in the media in Canada to try to get this issue on the main stage in the Canadian forum and media. And we feel very strongly that the Canadian media, despite some of its characteristics, is very, very open to the possibilities of covering this issue in a very broad scope and a very broad way. So we're working very hard in that direction, along with our initiatives with Alfred and with Michael. Thank you.
I'm Michael Sala. I founded the Exopolitics Institute in 2005, which was created to help scholars and activists in the field of exopolitics better coordinate and pull their resources together so that they can be most effective in their respective projects. We have an online certification program where people can do exopolitics courses. We have an online journal where people can submit scholarly articles, 5,000 words or so, the next edition coming up in May. And we also organise a regular conference. Angelica Whitecliff is the main organiser for the next conference coming up in 2010, and that's also supported by the Institute. And I also have been doing some freelance writing for the Examiner recently, the Honolulu Examiner, which is also helping to get the word out about exopolitics.
Hi, I'm Angelica Whitecliff, and Michael just did mine. Mostly, I'm here to help promote consciousness, awakening consciousness, and the ideas of transformation and contact, and the transformation that takes place in people because of contact, and bringing those ideas together along with new energy, new science, and merging that into a conference event. We have our next conference in January of 2010, the Earth Transformation Conference. And I also write a column for the Examiner. So I am the Earth Transformation Examiner.
Hello, I'm Paula Harris. I'm kind of the international component here in that because I used to live in Italy for 15 years, I'm kind of a bridge between the United States and Italy. I have written two books on exopolitics. Exopolitics, How Do You Speak to a Ball of Light? And Exopolitics, All of the Above, that just came out. I also started out as a journalist and am still interviewing military witnesses and people who have had experiences. And today, while I've been at this conference, and I have interviewed Milton Torres and Mr. Kirkland. Now, the thing about interviewing them is my interview will be put on my website in Italian, German, French, and English. My website is in four languages, so it goes all over the world. The thing that I'm the most proud of, however, is the fact that at least once a year in Rome, I tend to bring together people, young people who are interested in exopolitics, and they, with their own dime, and I have to stress this because none of us are financed up here. Everything is with our own dime. These guys that have come here have come with their own money, the second time they've come. They came to the conference in Rome at the end of November of this year. Frederick from Denmark, Robert from Germany, Torbjörn from Sweden, and Pepon from Spain. The result of Pepin's coming to Rome is that in July of this year, there will be a very big conference at Exopolitics in Spain. It will blow open this subject in a country that really wants to know about it, and invited our Stephen Greer, Nick Pope, and Sergeant Major Robert Dean. So these things bring enormous satisfaction to us journalists because, like everyone else here, I want to see something happen.
Thank you, Paula. First of all, I'd just like to say thank you to you because you're bringing us together in Europe. My name is Frederik Uldal. I live in Copenhagen in Denmark, and I've set up the Danish Exopolitics Initiative, and it has to do with awareness raising of the exopolitical issue. And I mainly do that through the publishing videos on the internet, so you pretty much see what we're doing back there, and we're going back to edit that all that video material like we did last year. And also, last year I distributed James Fox's Out of the Blue documentary to all the members of the Danish Parliament, and maybe that resulted in that the Danish some Danish files were released last year. It's possible. I don't know. And yeah, I think I'll hand over the mic to my colleague.
Thanks, Frederick. Thanks, Paula. My name is Robert Fleischer. I have a background in television and languages. I discovered on the internet some of the videos of the X conference 2 years ago, I think. And I thought, wow, now that's interesting information. I didn't have that before. I didn't see that anywhere. People should know about that. So that's why I founded in June 2007 the German Exopolitics Initiative. And what we're mainly doing is we're bringing the information to the German, to the attention of the German public, because as you can imagine, the access to foreign language information is not really easy if you don't speak English. So we've been doing this for 1.5 years now. Almost 2 years, yeah. And with all the modesty that one should show when you're sitting on a stage in front of a lot of people, I have to say, I consider what we've been doing to be quite successful. It's not only my job, it's also the work of the people that we're working with, Frederick, Michael, so many people. Also in Germany, we have a network of 50, 60 active people distributing information. And we had more than a million hits, visitors, unique visitors on our website so far. And I would also assume that the media is taking us seriously, because I don't know if I already told you that, Stephen, but some months after the last X conference last year, where I interviewed Edgar Mitchell about Roswell, the British released another batch of files, and then Germany's biggest TV station, ARD, called me, and they said, we want to have that interview that you made with Edgar Mitchell that we saw on the internet. So I gave it to them, and they broadcast that at prime time in Germany with I don't know how many millions of spectators. And this is the kind of work we're doing. That's why I think it's an important work, because most people in Germany have an opinion about UFOs, but very few of them have an informed opinion. So we're trying to promote that, and we just trust in the process of people making up their own mind if they have the information available. So
wonderful, thank you. Hold on to that mic. We're going to chat a little bit, but look, anybody wants to do a question, you can come up at any time, and we'll get you a mic and take your question. So think about what you'd like to do. Come on up. I've got a quick question. If I'm not mistaken, Angelica, it sounds like you and Rebecca are on very similar ground. Do you have plans to work together? Have you been discussing possibly working together in the future?
Well, next year at the X conference, we're going to be doing some, I think, experiencer work, aren't we, Steve?
Yes. I don't know. You can see why Michael married her, don't you? He's saying, I want a life where things happen. No, I was thinking about doing that this time, and it was just too late to pull it together, because I like what Barbara Lamb does at the IUFOC. And we almost did it. I sort of got him thinking we would, and then I let him down, which is what guys do. But next year we will do that, and we will have plenty of time, and it will probably, we'll hopefully have a lot of people come in and have a wonderful get-together, very private. And yes, you'll be part of that, so that's good.
So both Rebecca and I will be presenting,
yes,
then on exoconsciousness, on the transformation happening in consciousness, and on ET contact.
Yes, you will both be presenting. And that is the end of the preemptive strikes on my speaker list for next year. There will be no more of that. They're in. The rest of you are going to have to wait. Okay? You got a question? Let's do it.
It's not really a question. I want to thank you all. I'm so honored to meet so many of you. I'm very new to this, but I wanted to restate something that was said to me some years ago, and that was, I said the term conspiracy theorist to someone, and she said, how dare you? Separate those words. There are conspiracies, and there are theories, and for those words that we're married together to discount so many things that we witness or know about, it's an injustice to even utter that phrase. So I would remind all of you, when somebody says conspiracy theory or conspiracy theorist, tell them, please separate those words. They're two different things. Thanks.
Nicely put, nicely put. The point she's making is very important. The truth embargo has its own lexicon of terminologies, right? They built up, use, repeat. That's how you instill stuff. What we're doing is building up our lexicon of terminologies. Exopolitics is a term, and their disclosure process is a term. We're creating our lexicon to describe our reality, to replace their lexicon, so that true believer will eventually disappear from the language in this context. Victor, you have
could,
a thought?
Yeah, could I comment on that, Steve? It's very interesting that you should bring that up in terms of a lexicon. I know many of you perhaps have read things by Noam Chomsky or other famous linguists in the English language. And one of the things that Charles Weingartner said, who wrote the book Teaching is a Subversive Activity, what he said was, if you erase the language or the lexicon of biology, for example, there is no biology. If you eliminate all the words to describe biology, biology just disappears. What we're doing here is creating that lexicon. And whatever words that we develop, or the language that we talk, or the way we language, I use language as a verb, is creating that language. And language, what does it do? It creates perceptions. And those perceptions are gradually seeping into the consciousness of everybody who hears the language. So the language of exopolitics is gradually seeping into the mainstream culture. And it is also destroying the culture of silence and lies that have developed their own lexicon. So it's, as John Mack used to say, this is a battle over worldviews, because worldviews are a compilation of lexicons and language. So it's really important that we all understand that the language that we use is so specific that it creates perceptions and consciousness. So I want to thank that young lady for saying that, and for Steve to mention that word lexicon. So thank you.
Okay, got a question here?
Hi. My name is Madeleine. I'm from Quebec, Canada. And I have a question for Alfred. All right. I've been reading about ETs, UFOs, and stuff like that since I was 15, since my best friend was abducted. And all through these years, reading, and I wanted to make a sense out of it all. And the way I see it now is, the ET phenomenon is only one aspect of human reality. My question is, it's based on something. It's a big feeling that we're going to be going through a lot of shit in the next years to come. Alfred, if you had someone in front of you and they said, how can I prepare for what's coming? What would you tell them?
Thank you. Okay. Very briefly, I would say to expand one's sense of one's multidimensional self. And because we are multidimensional beings, like many of the ETs that are visiting Earth, or the ETs that we are discovering on Mars, our neighbor now, through the Mars rover. And by multidimensional, I mean just that scientifically, there's a Swedish science who has weighed the soul. It weighs about 3/4 of an ounce. And that we are not only our physical body, but we are a composite of many etheric bodies, or as people call them, different energy valves that can range from 7 to 12 to more. Part of my body may be in the galactic center now, as I'm bringing information about the center into this room. That's how large human beings are. And the significance of the shift, I think, is the shift from our planetary selves to our universal selves. Practically speaking, I think that probably daily meditation and prayer is the most practical thing that one can do. And learning more and being in the company of fellow human beings who are willingly joining in this process brought to us by courtesy of the galaxy and beyond. Thank you.
All right. I'm going to go with the questions because I really want the audience to be involved. So,
this addresses what Mr. Peckman was talking about in his last lecture, so I guess I'll address the question to him. First of all, unfortunately, people feel the need to, they tend to trust or believe in institutions. You know, they will hear what one person tells them and take it with a grain of salt, but if an institution comes out and says it, well then, they seem to think that that amounts to a consensus of sorts, which tends to be a problem. When we have the U.S. government controlling the information that goes out, at the same time we hear about this, we also hear about this push for governmental disclosure. We want the United States to come out and admit this stuff. Well, you know, if you've been lying and you're about to get caught in a lie, what do? You usurp the story. You take on the lie yourself, and you tell just as much of it as you need to serve your own purpose. So there's obviously a big problem coming up with United States government disclosure. We're not going to get the whole thing. They're going to be able to manipulate this, and therefore public opinion of this. Is there any strategy, then, to deal with that scenario? Because the last thing that we want is for you people to be called irrelevant because now the government has taken this over and, you know, they're going to walk us through this process, which is the last thing we want. There you go. Good question.
Who wants to take that on? Jeff?
Yeah, that was for me. So, well, my strategy in Denver is simply to engage the public in a very direct way because my observation is that when voters are confronted with an issue that they're being asked to vote on, that they rise to a higher level of responsibility. They assume a level of power that is inherently theirs that they don't normally utilize, and they take the whole issue very seriously, and they make their decision. Now, whether they vote for or against this ballot initiative is actually less important than the fact that they are engaged in thinking about it, discussing it, making a personal decision, things that they may not have a reason to do. So this is just a very local thing that I do believe will provide a breakthrough and set an example, and my prediction is that it might create a race not to the finish line, but to the starting line of disclosure. And that when they are starting to feel irrelevant and ignored, that's when they will start to pay attention, because then they'll feel like they're losing control of a very important issue, and they just don't like that.
Well said. That's advanced activism. I have a question for Milt. Milt, I call him Milt now. We're buddies.
That's it. It's Milt. Uncle Milty was what the kids called.
Yeah. Major, simple question. You were a pilot,
yes.
Serviceman. You were a teacher.
Yes.
University. And then you retired, I think, generally.
Well,
quiet life.
When I was teaching, and I was in research.
And research as well. And then you retired, a comfortable life in Florida, and then all of a sudden the press start calling, and you're finally able to let the cat out of the bag that you've carried around on your back for 50 years.
Right.
Okay. Now that that's happened, are you starting to feel a little like an activist? You starting to get that sense?
No, I'm kind of set in my ways. I like my History Channel. I like education. I like that. You know, now, education includes all education, not some education, but all education. Every time you sit in front of a good news program and you get a little bit of information, that's something you have to continue to use and continue to learn, because that's important. My biggest problem is I'm wondering how long it's going to be before my remote finger stops working.
Which is to say that he's paid his dues. He's worked a long time. I don't have to get everybody out on the front line. challenging the state. But let me say this. Milt is going to call on Monday morning for the government to end the truth embargo, and that will be a brief shining moment of advocacy. All right, let's have another question.
Okay. I want to address, who's the guy with the glasses in the middle who just talked about language and perception?
Victor.
Victor, yeah. I think perception comes before language, because that's why we're all here, because we've perceived realities that we're trying to give language to. So what's happening here and on the panel is that we're forming an exo-culture, you know, that's giving voice to these cognitions, and it's sort of like the pre-birth. When disclosure comes, that is the birthing of the culture. So all of us are in the formation of an exo-consciousness. And that's why I think the development of exo-consciousness is very important. So I want to see what you and other people on the panel see, how we can expand exo-consciousness to more, not say imaginal realms, but higher forms of perception, so we can then create the language for the general population to then incorporate into their mainstream thinking. So first, and then Rebecca, yeah.
Yeah, in my years of education, 35 years of it, and you may be right, perception may precede language, yeah. Because you know, young children, before they have a language, they do have the capacity to perceive. In my years in the classroom, one of the things that I had to do as an educator is give children a way to express those perceptions. And language, writing language and speaking language, is writing as much as you can and developing as much of the lexicon in your own personal, frame of perception was so important to me, and watching children develop that. And I use that that type of approach in all the work that I do, and that's why I focus very carefully on language. And perhaps they're sort of simultaneous processes. When you watch a child try to develop a perception, they attempt to do it in many different ways. And I try to use that with journalists and with people in the media who have a preconceived notion about the language that they're involved in. And it's so limited in their capacity to understand this concept. So in us expanding the lexicon of exopolitics, we have to provide them with as much information, first of all, and then all of the words that are necessary to describe the situation. As I said earlier, if there's no words to describe biology, there is no biology. There's just that thing that grows in the ground.
Alfred Weber came up with the word exopolitics, and now we have something to describe.
That's right.
Sure.
And I think, yeah, that
absolutely
will be the next several years of doing that, and that's the way that this disclosure will work. Is that we are going to be called upon, all of us, everyone in this room, are going to be called upon as experts to kind of give validity to the concept by using the language that we've used for years now to express it among ourselves. Now we have to expand that circle. Anyone else wants to?
Rebecca?
I'd just like to comment on the exoconsciousness. I had a very interesting talk a couple years ago with psychiatrists and philosophers about psychopathology and exoconsciousness. And is being exoconscious psychopathological? And does it belong in a psychiatric diagnosis? And it was interesting that as I began to dialogue with these academics, that I would bring up the vocabulary that I was used to dealing with as a person who's in ufology and exopolitics, and all I got was blank stares. They didn't have the language, they didn't have the vocabulary, and furthermore, they, most importantly probably, they didn't have the experience. And they didn't have the permission. And so I began to think creatively, because one of the things that I work with is, how are we going to get contact and exoconsciousness into the mainline normal, the paranormal as normal? And so I began to ask around. I said, well, in the gay community, how did the psychiatric profession decide that being gay was normal? And you know what they told me? They took a vote. I'm like, why can't we lobby the American psychiatric profession and have them take a vote on what is normal and what is sane? And really quickly, I wanted to address the woman who was talking about asking Alfred, what can we do to prepare for this post-disclosure world. First and foremost, I would suggest to people what they do is learn to remove the trauma scars from your brain and get a balanced, unified brain. The one thing we know about extraterrestrial brains is that they talk about that they have a unified, balanced brain. Get your brain balanced through music, through meditation, through something that I did called brain states technology, through yoga. Learn to balance those signals in your brain. Learn to use your psychic abilities. Learn to use your telepathic ability, your intuitive ability. Learn to think about your body as an energy system. So when we all learn how to teleport or transfigure and become a different molecular form, we can take our body, dissolve it, and then reform it again. So learn to live differently in your body.
What she said about taking your body with you, those Buddhists in Tibet and various other places have been doing this for years. Sometimes they ascend. Usually when they ascend, they leave only their fingernails and their toenails behind. The only person who I know took his entire body with him was Jesus. And I've been meditating for 40 years doing this parapsychology stuff for a long time. It took me 20 years as a teacher in a church environment to get them to even recognize that that might be a possibility.
I've been giving a lot of talks over the last 6 years to the military, to law enforcement, to defense contractors, to kids in schools, to anybody you can think of. The former mayor of Baghdad, Cap Dean, was the mayor of Baghdad for 8 months in 2004. And talking about language, the language of peace is something that we don't talk about very much because we think we can't achieve it sometimes. But in reality, it only takes about 21 days to create a new habit. And what I would tell my friends is that if you take a post-it note and you write on your post-it note, "I am peace," and you stick it on your bathroom mirror or your computer or your refrigerator and you look at it many, many times a day, in about 21 days, give or take a few days, even sooner, you will have rewired your mind, your heart. You will have seen how easy it is to let go of old ideas and to create a new habit. And then people say, "Wow, I'll have what she's having. What's she doing that's so different?" And we'll say, it's a choice. It's a choice to decide to be peace and to let go of violence. And perhaps when we get to this stage, all of us collectively, we will then be invited to enter the cosmic community because we are growing up. We are no longer teenagers who are out of control with our raging violent hormones. We are coming into the adult, mature world of people who understand why we're here and where we're going. And this is one of the reasons that Dr. Edgar Mitchell has invited Rebecca and me to be part of his Quantrek team, because this is part of his focus going into the future.
Very good. We got to move on. I've got a question for Joe Montaldo. If you could move the mic the other direction, to Joe, that one. There you go. And Joe, you may have to slide up a little bit. You did mention in the introduction that you founded a group called ICAR.
Yes.
And it's essentially kind of a grassroots organization, of thousands of members dealing with contact issue, and with many, many, many contactees in it. As near as I can tell, you've built the largest grassroots contact network in the world. Do you foresee the contactees, experiencers, abductees, however they wish to be called, do you see them soon becoming a political force and exerting the pressure collectively?
You know, it's interesting you brought that up, because last night I was up late dealing with some of my state directors and some of our radio show hosts. And one of the things that they're going to implement this year is we're going to try to get all 12,500 of our contactees to sign a petition for disclosure from our government. Also, we want to have what we're going to have signed. I want to give it to you so you have it on file as well with the Exopolitical Committee. But the thing about it is now, we're also something else I shouldn't be telling you this, but I'm going to tell you now anyway. We decided last night, starting next year in March, every month the PRN network, which I own, will be exopolitical month from now on. March will be the exopolitical month. All 52 of our programs will do exopolitics for the entire month of March to prepare for Stephen Bessette's exopolitical conference. So we're going to donate all of our time and effort.
Very nice. Thank you.
Entire month.
All right. We've got a question.
This question is for Angelica and Dr. Hardcastle. I'm just in my personal investigation, I've just noticed that when it came to the paranormal investigations, that is, I've noticed my friends who are psychics have a tendency to have more encounters with crafts. So I was just curious if in your field with conscious work with consciousness, you've encountered the same thing where psychics have been drawn or the ships have been drawn to these psychics, because I've just noticed that we do have captured pictures of them in our investigations. So I don't know if you can elaborate on that. And I guess as individuals, what else can we do to have an encounter? Because personally, I'm not going to hold my breath for the government for disclosure. So,
well, I think one of the most important things that we can do is to recognize that we are multidimensional, and to start utilizing those abilities and to start training ourselves, definitely through meditation, but also it's a very conscious choice that one makes that you want to pursue this area, that you want to pursue expanding your consciousness into higher states. And it's more than doing meditation. As a multidimensional being, when we are inspired, when we are in these states where we are literally penetrating outside of this density into higher frequency ranges, then what we're doing is we are also opening ourselves up to contact with other realities and beings at other frequencies. And when you do so by first making the very clear intent of what you wish to achieve, for example, if you wish to start making telepathic contact with other entities at other frequencies, then absolutely step forward to do that, but first be clear that you only wish to have contact with those entities who are in service to the highest good for all and who are willing to recognize the will of your higher self. When you set parameters like this, what you do is you're showing yourself self-respect, and you are telling the universe that these are the parameters that you want to set up in which you want to move forward in. It helps to create safety and security for you to start exploring realms that might be very new for you. And so this is a real important aspect. And so the more you do this, practicing the telepathic communications and the multidimensional consciousness, then what I found in working with seminars and at my conferences, that we will start taking pictures, and though we won't see the ships with our physical eyes, we will have the ships show up on the film footage afterward. And what this phenomenon is basically these ships are outside of our physical visual range. They're operating in other frequencies. They're just outside of our reality, you might say. But with consciousness, we can totally permeate these other realities. And really, I think the many, many ETs out there are waiting for us to take this step and to do it in a loving way, in a peace-filled way, in a way in which we are deciding we want to extend our hand in brotherhood, in sisterhood, to our cosmic neighbors. And this opens the door for them to communicate back with us. And it's been my experience that this is one of the best ways to start calling in the ships and actually getting your verification. Even if you don't see them with your physical eyes, examine the photographs afterward, and you'll get orbs. You will get other different phenomenon to validate for you that there is multidimensional contact taking place.
Thank you. I have a question for Frederick. and Robert too if he comes back.
He's too busy.
But they, well, they're live streaming.
He'll be here.
I mean, they're multitasking. They're live streaming to Europe. They're answering questions. See, the United States is the home of the truth embargo. I mean, that's really where it starts. We were the superpower. We called the shots. We made the call. The other nations went along. I'm not surprised. So in Europe, really, I mean, so most of the focus on maintaining this embargo where it was here, because Americans got the brunt of it. Europe, I don't think so. I think they were going to follow along, and those governments really didn't need to work their citizens over about this. So I think that's why in Europe, I think there's potentially a greater receptivity for rapid politicalization of the issue. So I'm not surprised. We already have an ExoPolitics website in Denmark, in Germany, in Spain, in France. We just added Belgium, and of course David Griffin in the UK, moving like crazy. And in due course, we could have an exopolitical website for the EWN ExoPolitics World Network in every country in Europe. Do you feel this way as well? And any thoughts on how we can rapidly get the rest of the countries on board here? European countries.
Actually, I received many emails from people in other European countries who seem to regularly go to ExoPolitics Germany or ExoPolitics Denmark. And they say, I want to found that in my country as well. And I think that, I mean, the way it started was exactly like that. I just started that. I don't think that we have to take an active approach for more European countries to come aboard. I mean, I think we had more or less two initiatives per year coming on board throughout the last 2 years. That was, you know, I think it's a process, you know, and it's all right.
Well, do me a favor. If you have any more queries about people that want to try to do what you're doing in their country, you need to forward them to me right away so I can get to them and let's set them up. Let's set the site up.
Sure, sure.
Right? First come, first serve. They want to do it. They like the issue. Sure. They can then create a site. Let's do that.
Yeah, they have questions about, you know, how the technical, you know, technical things, because it, I mean, not everybody can do that because it takes a certain, not, you know, you need knowledge in internet, media, you need a certain journalistic feeling, you need whatever you need, you know, but I think that's the thing that keeps most people from becoming very active from the very first day on.
In fact, one of my favorite sites, well, I say favorite, it's not the site, but rather the setup, is France. Jean-Jacques Dubois, that's right, Jean-Charles. He's a witness. In fact, he was at the November 12th press conference, the National Press Club, that was put together by James Fox and Leslie Kane, because he was a French airline captain. He had a pretty extraordinary sighting, and he's a highly reputable person. And so he came, and among the other individuals, he talked about that at the press club. And that's all well and good. Then he went back to France, and then he contacted me and set up the ExoPolitics France website. So he is a witness. He's a pilot. He's running the website. See, this gives you a sense of the convergence of the politics, the people, the experience, and what have you. And there will be more of those coming on pretty soon. Now, let's see.
I answer some of that? Because having lived in Italy and having spoken in Switzerland, France, and so forth, the difference between Europe and the United States and European media and the news shows is that the word UFO does not have a stigma to it because they're looking at an unidentified flying object, a phenomenon that exists. And not only does it exist for some of those countries, like France, that put out the Cometa report, it's a matter of national security. So whatever is flying over airspace, it doesn't need to be, like our discussion before, paranormal phenomenon, your consciousness that expands or whatever it is. They are convinced that whatever is up there could be a problem for national security, which is not the way we all want to look at it because we want to know what's inside the craft. But it's much easier and much more digestible in Europe because they're looking at UFOs and using the word UFOs, and it's no big deal.
It helps that, of course, in another country, a different language, right? For instance, in Latin America, Central America, UFO, it's not called a UFO, it's called an OVNI, you see? Remember, terminology and lexicon we talked about before? The government chose UFO, that acronym, as the seed kernel for the Ridicule project. Ridicule that acronym. Make everything you can to make that silly and nonsensical. And then append people to the acronym, you got them. But you go to another country, it's not UFO, it's OVNI. And unless the Mexican government has tried to do the same thing with that term, it doesn't work. And so outside the U.S., there's just not the resistance to the politicization process, which is another reason why the circle is closing around the United States. So pretty soon, our government is going to look out, and they're going to see a bunch of eyes looking at them like, okay, when are you going to do it? When are you going to do it? When are you going to do it? So next question here. Well, and in fact, this is going to be the last question from the floor. We're done in 4 minutes.
Excuse me. Can I add something to
absolutely,
the
Robert.
Exopolitics activist thing? You know, I consider it really important that we build up a network, and that is the way how we've been working in Europe, especially thanks to Paola's important work that she's been doing to keep us all together. And we try to cooperate wherever we can, and I think networking is a real important thing. We're building up an online community of people where all the people who want to get involved in exopolitics in Germany can register and get in touch with each other. And I really invite everyone to adapt this thing. I give that away for free. You install it so that you can have online communities in your countries. And I think the networking, the idea of networking and solving tasks together is a model of the future anyway.
Of course. Yes, indeed. All right, our last question from the floor.
I'm not sure how to make this as brief as I would like. I will try really hard. It seems like there are organizations that have been able to get a lot of free publicity by using their notoriety to their advantage, like PETA having essentially nude women with vegetables over them, placed over them in provocative ways. Okay. Now, this idea isn't quite as provocative as that. I'm thinking that you have someone here that could manage an infomercial really well, and both convey a very lively dialogue with any one of you or all of you over a tightly edited infomercial or series of infomercials, so that not only would you be able to discuss the topics that are important to you, perhaps even sell some of this. You all have products of different kinds. And then maybe you have six of them in rotation, and you put them Sunday afternoons, right after the talk shows, all the talking shows, and all the talking heads in the morning. You have people that are interested in these topics, and right after that, you usually go to real estate ads, a lot of different types of infomercials that aren't that interesting for most people. So you have some people hanging on after these political shows that would be interested in this topic.
Wants to respond? Joe.
I think you're absolutely right. And the key to that, in some respects, is humor and viral marketing. I did two 60-second commercials for my campaign for Congress, both of which kind of had a little bit of fun with the whole alien thing. Because the audience that I'm talking to that's going to take disclosure seriously already knows I'm serious about it. And there's no way to convince anybody else, so why not have fun with them? And the goal of that was to get those ads attached to emails and sent around and having people talking about it and creating buzz. Probably the best book out there right now that I've seen recently is called How to Create a Worldwide Rave, with the word rave, of just getting people talking about whatever your product or service is. And in the context of that, there's really no such thing as bad publicity. It's okay if people make fun about us. If we're getting the message or part of that seed kernel out there, we can do back what Steve was just talking about in terms of the government strategy, back at that and spreading that message. And the key to that, which you're raising, is really video. Anything else is pretty much boring, especially to a younger audience. So I think you're right on. The other thing I wanted to add to what was said earlier around advancing the exo-consciousness, exo-political agenda is to become a peaceful human being, to heal the old scars and wounds and create a planet that lives as the garden in space that it really is. That is the key to advancing both of those agendas, I believe. And then I'd ask you to take a look at libertarianism as the political philosophy that best advances that as well, and I could go on, but I'll stop.
All right, thank you, Joe. We've got one more question from one of our AV people, and I like to keep my AV people happy. So.
Oh, and then I've got a question for Uncle Milt, if we could add that at
when, all right, hang on. Here you go.
This question is from Ms. Harris and Mr. Alford. Thank you all together for coming forth with the disclosure information that y'all received by yourself during your own private investigations. The movie industry and she was saying about how the CIA or, I mean, not you, but documents I was reading about CIA coming to certain Hollywood, movie producers paying them to do certain movies. And with your presentation, like, opened my head up some more. But 2009, we have three top movies. The Day the Earth Stood Still with Keanu Reeves, The Giant, I think, is an Anunnaki, and The Race to Witch Mountain, which was excellent, and the movie I just seen called The Knowing with Nicolas Cage about the numbers that was in a time vault. Now, I just watched this movie, and I wasn't even thinking or, you know, have that any type of UFO activity was in this movie, but as the movie gets deep into it, it's about the 2012 Solarmax that supposed to happen. And at the end of the movie, the aliens come back, humanoid form, humanoid looking, come back and rescue all the kids. And Keanu Reeves had to give his son up so he can go off and live a happy life, a peaceful life on another planet. And at the end, it's like all the kids are on the planet. You can see all like different planets in the sky, and they like run into a tree, a huge tree, white leaves, the tree of life, I guess. And it was like real deep. Yeah, cool movie, and it just threw me off guard because I didn't even think it would be on that type of a subject. And that's when I learned about the Solarmax. It was like a couple of weeks ago watching that movie, and then Confirmation with Mr. Albert. So. Yeah, it's coming together. Connect the dots.
This is a good example. There's this convergence. We are running late, folks. We've got to get going here. This convergence of media, entertainment, politics, contactees, government actions. Look, this is happening. And I know there are some people who can't believe that, but I think it's pretty obvious that it is. All right. Before we move to the wrap-up here, Ron James, who is in charge of the AV this year, wants to say a couple of words. Mr. James.
Hi, everybody.
Hey.
I just wanted to take a moment to acknowledge the fact that this year we had a lot of really good volunteers and a lot of really good staff to make sure that the AV went relatively seamlessly, except for the obvious seams. And I also wanted to let people know that we do have the DVDs for the conference. We're just about sold out of the ones we have on site, but we have order forms. And the entire conference is available for $150, or you can order DVDs anywhere from $20 down to $10 each. And if you fill out the order form, your shipment will go out within a week, and it's guaranteed it comes from my studio in Arizona. So if you haven't gotten your DVDs yet, get them now, because once the conference is over, if you haven't ordered, it'll be a little harder to get, mostly because you won't be able to find me. So anyway, I just wanted to, let's have a round of applause for all the AV people that helped. And thank you.
And in particular, I want to note two of my long, long time supporters who are also pretty smart cookies really jumped in here to help. And I'm referring to Jim Boca, the gentleman in the orange, and Paul Nahay, the distinguished gentleman with the beard. And of course, we had many other volunteers. Anne Marie out at a desk, and Jill King, and Seth Barata, who gave a question here. They've been with me for a long time. They just emerged out of nowhere. I didn't put out an ad or anything, and they're just always here. And I have others. Jan Bennett's always come down from New York. And without them, we could do it. And I'm sure they'll be there next year. We're very pleased with how the AV went, and so now I want to give a round of applause to Ron, who came in short notice from Sedona to put this on. All right, Cheryl, where are you, Cheryl? Cheryl, oh, she went off somewhere. Ah, come on up. Did you have, I want you.